The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dreen.
Howdy, podcast time. Episode 91, Jeff Schmidt, the guest, coming up in moments. He is standing by waiting to yap with me. We will have plenty to talk about, as I've known Jeff for a long time now. We'll get into all that, and I'll get into his intro in a bit. Real quick, though, the guys from Arabian Radio Network, I already have that interview in the can. That'll be released here pretty soon. A little bit more going into building that one, as I had three of the nine producers at that network of various stations over there in Dubai on the show with me, so we'll chat soon. And Larry McGinnis, a great writer, a great creative out of Canada, who was at Chum for like decades and still doing amazing creative. Anyway, we're going to set up a chat and talk to him. So someone more on the creative writing side of this business, we'll talk to him. A few other guys that I've mentioned in the past that I'm still trying to, you know, work out times with. These people I talk to are all very busy, very popular, very talented. So it takes a little bit of time to get them set up, but we will do that. Any requests, of course, you can send them over to me. Use the contact page on my website. You can really use RyanDreen.com, RyanOnTheRadio.com, ProducersPodcast.com. They all go to the same place. RyanDreen@gmail, good place to hit me up. Now, let's get to the guest today, Jeff Schmidt. Let me start, before I say anything about him, I want to play you, about a minute of the latest Alien Imaging Effects demo. It highlights his production skills, no doubt. It also highlights the sounds that he makes and the products that he sells. Here's AI Effects 2.
Now check this out.
From the super secret sound labs at Alien Imaging.
Battle tested in major markets worldwide.
This
is the sound.
Is the sound
of now.
Now.
This is the sound
of AI.
AI Effects. AI 2.
Here we go next.
Create desire.
Super slick.
Build anticipation.
High design.
Pull your listeners in.
Pure imaging. Awesome.
And move them ahead.
AI Effects. Over 400 sonic branding tools.
Featuring.
So again, you can hear the entire demo, alien-imaging.com. You can go to RyanOnTheRadio.com. The show notes page is massive, and there is a link at the top of the show notes page that will take you to a happy place. Free sound, really. Why don't I just say it? Free sound. So go check it out on the website. If you are not there yet, you may want to go there while you're checking out the episode, or don't forget to do it later. Jeff Schmidt, just some amazing sound design for radio. He sound designs for video games. In fact, he had taken a little step away from radio at one point to do that full time. We'll talk about that. Also, a great in-house radio imaging producer in San Francisco. He's been around a long time. I have a huge amount of respect for his technical abilities, for his creative abilities, and for the tools that he creates that, again, like I said, I've used for oh so long. And in this intro, I have to tell you, he's hooked us up with it's a cool, unique link on his site that has specials for the podcast listeners. Possibly free, possibly? I would highly recommend checking out the show notes page on my website. Again, RyanDreen.com or RyanOnTheRadio.com gets you there. The Jeff Schmidt show notes. Go there. Check it out. Otherwise, I think, was that a good enough intro?
I think, it's all downhill from here.
Great. No, but seriously, I think I reached out to you because I found some of your product or something. It had to be 08 because I had just started this podcast. And I said, it was one of those, hey, man, I don't really have advertisers, but I'd love to do some kind of a special. Maybe you do like a Ryan on the Radio deal. And you're like, yeah, I don't know who the hell you are, but sure, great.
Actually, I remember it differently. But okay. Go ahead.
Okay, well, so the way I thought I had sort of emailed you and like, hey, what do you think? I don't even know what I'm doing with this podcast yet. And so that's kind of the original way, as far as I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remembered it slightly differently. I remember hearing the podcast and thinking to myself, this is really cool. This reminds me of Rap Magazine today.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Rap Magazine was cool back, you know, before there was internet. It was like, and it's still cool, but it's, you know, now that with the internet, like I get to not only hear like a deep conversation with some of these like amazing producers, but yeah. also hear their audio like that to me. And you don't need to like pay a subscription. That blew me away. So I thought it was a brilliant concept. So I remember sending you an email saying like, cause the way I launched Alien back in the day
yeah.
was through Jerry Vigil's Rap Mag. I bought like the first, you could buy back then the first 2 minutes of the CD he would send out.
Yep. I remember that.
And I put a demo on there. It was like $250 or whatever. And I bought an ad in the back. And that's how I launched Alien back in the day. So when I heard you, this is my memory of it. When I heard mm-hmm. your podcast, and maybe you did like email to me and say,
yeah, yeah,
here's
whatever.
The podcast or whatever. But I remember hearing it and thinking like, this is the new Rap Magazine. And
yeah, well,
I
want to
advertise
cool.
on that. And I think I asked you like, can I buy ads or something? And you're like, yeah, I don't really do that.
Yeah.
It's been 8 years since we kind of like communicated. We talked about other stuff too, but finally showing up on this amazing podcast is like every time you come out with a new one, I feel less worthy of coming on here. So it's been fun.
No. Well, I hope I make it clear that you are 100% worthy. I should have had you on a long time ago. And I have to be honest, at a certain point in my head, since we've conversed so much, you know, email, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, it's almost like in my head I already had you on.
Yeah, yeah. It's all good. I mean, I think, you know, like, again, it's like, oh, yeah, John Frost number two. It's like, who doesn't eat that up, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Please. So, totally awesome.
Yeah, so I have a whole list here. I guess I was going to do kind of a double sort of background, but you already sort of answered it. I was curious because I wonder if more people know you now for Alien Imaging, although, like I said, solid imaging producer at the station level. But anyway, take me back. What was the very first piece of sound design you made and why?
Oh, I was a kid with a tape recorder recording weird sounds in my bedroom, and then... You know, it was like one of those Panasonic tape recorders. I'm dating myself now because like millennials are like, what the hell is a tape recorder? my parents got me a little, you know, tape recorder and it was like they had these mechanical buttons they had to press and you had to press two of them down, the play and the record button at the same time to record. And it had a little condenser microphone on the front. And I discovered that, you know, by moving the thing around, it made its own noise. And then I figured out how to press play and rewind at the same time and the tape would go really, really slow. And I figured out how to press fast forward and rewind at the same time to make it kind of like it couldn't decide which mm-hmm. way it wanted to go. So mm-hmm. it would like literally scratch, right? Mm-hmm. So like I would hit the box while it was recording and create this thump sound and then like play it back and just kind of record back and forth and manipulate these little cassette tapes. So that's probably my first memory of actually recording something and then trying to mess with it, which sounds like maybe eight.
Yeah, that's really funny to me. I didn't expect that answer only because typically it's the I want to be a radio DJ, so we are in our bedrooms with the tape player making shows.
No, we did that. My friends and I did that, but we were always we were Mystery Science Theater 3000 before that even existed. So we would literally sit there and record shows off the radio, but then kind of comment and make fun of what was happening.
So then on a more of a professional level, not even that you were selling them yet, but when did you get, you know, officially into sound design where you would be able to use the sounds in a professional setting?
Yeah, I think pretty much my first radio job in upstate New York. And I think I must have the worst radio jobs ever because every place I've ever worked couldn't or wouldn't pay for production libraries. They just wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I started in radio producing a morning show on a little AM talk radio. Right, little right-wing talk radio show, and I was just trying to get into radio, and I did morning, and so I would make bits, and then that would put me in the production room, and eventually my goal was actually I wanted to have my own show, but I wanted to do FM talk radio because I thought AM talk radio was old and boring and just mm-hmm. you know old people talking about politics, and so I eventually got some shots to do shows, and I would ended up, you know, because we didn't even have a production guy really. So I ended up doing all my own production. I ended up grabbing like the deep voice jock on the FM classic rock station to voice the stuff for me. And then I would produce it up with all this, you know, at the time, hip music. And I remember sending tapes out to try to get talk radio gigs, and everybody's like, yeah, you know, your show's okay, but who does any production? And it's like, oh, I did that. I'm like, well, if you want to do that, we could probably find some things for you to do. So I just kind of just found my way into doing production that way. But every station I ever worked at, I had to make my own stuff. And a lot of it, you know, I don't know how long you've been in the business, but if you were in long enough, you were probably using demos from these production libraries they'd send on CDs or whatever.
Right.
And you're like stealing little clips off of them and editing them together. And that kind of like, and doing it on tape, you know, so it's like you're reversing a little section and then you're adding it to another section later. That was my first. So now I would just bank that stuff. I'd store it on a reel and just say, or a DAT later and say, these are my 12 sounds, right? And I have 12. And that was what I used to image the station with.
So short of the whole, in the early days where you would just kind of mess with a tape player and just get whatever you could get, when you started to actually realize there was more of an art to it and you could use tools. So in other words, you can think of something in your head and you have the skills to actually get there.
Yeah, I still don't feel like I can do that. Well, I mean, no, I understand what you're asking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a legitimate question. You do eventually get you build a confidence that you can build stuff. But it's, you know, if you're trying to move forward, it's always like I feel like I'm reinventing the wheel every time I make something now, because I kind of just naturally get kind of snobbish. It's like, well, I kind of made that already. That's like sometimes I make a version 2 of a library, but a lot of times I just abandon ship and try to change directions. But it was probably once I got into San Francisco, and that was in 97, and that's when I had access to a digital workstation. So before that, like I was all on tape, and I think we had a little 2-track digital recorder, but it wasn't until I started seeing what you could do with plugins in Pro Tools.
So would you probably, I'm guessing, take organic sounds or, you know, sound effects from libraries like that, or even glitchy stuff you're able to make, and then tweak those, you know, so more organic stuff and make it turn into
yes, because particularly when I came to San Francisco, because it was for an adult alternative station, KFOG, and their imaging was not the flashy top 40 whiz bang kind of stuff. It was much more organic and much more natural, right? More spoken word rather than announcery kind of stuff. No real vocal effects. You wouldn't use, certainly not distortion. Filtering was very minimal, right? All that kind of stuff that kind of became much more contemporary. It wasn't really part of the thing. So I had to develop sounds. It still helped build production pieces, you know.
But
they couldn't be like that's, you know, so and that was challenging, and that was one of my frustrations with that job too, was that it was like, oh, I listened to all these demos from all these amazing producers. It's like, that stuff sounds so easy compared to what I'm doing, and everybody loves it and no one cares about what I'm doing because it's kind of boring, you know, from that perspective. But it was much more about writing and casting and telling stories and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's definitely on your imaging side, and I really want to get back to KFOG for sure. But as far as on the sound design side, to stay there for just a bit, when you finally figured out that if you wanted to make a solid, you know, metallic sounding hit, whatever it is, whatever, you know, kind of standard issue sound design effect that we're sort of used to having in the imaging studio, did you finally get there? Were you ever able to, you know, see another producer doing what you wanted to do?
No, I mean, that's like, I've listened to so many of your interviews with guys I admire, I find, and this is true with music too, being a musician, I found this with high-end musicians, almost all of these guys were exposed early on to somebody doing the craft really well.
And
they were like standing, like I just saw a Michael Jackson documentary like a couple nights ago, right? And they literally show him as a, like, you know, young adult in the studio was like watching Stevie Wonder, right? Hmm. And it's just like, of course he was surrounded by music and all that, but, you know, having those kind of early experiences, I think, really helps people. And unfortunately, you know, it's like I'm kind of envious of that, because it's not that I didn't have talented people around me, but from the production room, it's like I always kind of ended up in situations where I was at a station and like, we don't have a production guy, you're it. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like I had to listen to like the old FMQB tapes, right? The CDs that used to go out, and they would highlight imaging from all over the country. This is before the internet, obviously. So you would just hear what they were doing in like Fresno, right? It just seemed like so far away, or San Jose or wherever, you know, Lubbock. And you'd hear some little station and just like, wow, they did it, like cool stuff. And that was kind of like the way you expanded your mind, or at least for me, because there was no in-house guy that was like, here, let me show you how it's done. And so I was really envious of those guys that had that.
Well, especially on the sound design, though. I mean, on that side, like for me, you know, you hear a promo, you generally know, all right, he's using some kind of a wipe or a hit effect here. He's got obviously the instrumental portion of the music here. I can hear that he's filtering out the voice. You know, generally speaking, I can, you know, this is when you're starting out. You can kind of figure out the basics of what's happening. But to create some of these crazy sounds that you make, I know some basics. I know, you know, layering is key. You know, obviously filters, the parts that you start with is key. But I still, like, I don't know how you get to where you get on a lot of this.
I think, you know, if you're asking me how it happens, I think it's, I try to decide sonically where I want to go.
Right.
And then it's a process of like trying to create sounds that are close to what I hear in my head. And these are not like when I'm talking about like create sounds, I'm not talking about creating a finished sound right now. I'm talking about creating like a bank of material from which I can draw from to create further stuff. So like there's this massive noise making process where it's like I'm making all this sound, I'm making all this noise, and some of it might be cool, but I've kind of built in my own little filter. Like now I'm trying to create stuff that sounds a little bit more like this now, right? And so I kind of have like a creative direction that I'm trying to go. And that immediately helps me exclude everything that doesn't sound like it fits with where my head is at.
Mm-hmm.
And then it helps me accept the things that are, and I pursue those ideas further. Because really what you're doing is you're kind of brainstorming with gear and audio and, okay, what if I try this kind of sound in that? What if I do this? What if I use this patch and did it through this? And like, you're just, it's like just a really time-consuming experimentation, brainstorming with processes in audio, and doing so much of it that you can filter through and try to create a cohesive set of sounds that sound like they all belong and complement each other. So that's kind of the short of it.
Well, you know, it makes sense, and I've heard others speak about it in that manner, but still it's like Latin to me.
Well, yeah, Latin is Latin until you actually start hanging out with people who speak Latin, and then you kind of And I guess that gets back to your other question. It's like who do you have around? And today, I you know, like you have the internet, you know, so like you can hear anything. You can hear any station practically on the planet. You know, you can scope them and just strip out all the music and hear nothing but the production. You can spend a day or two on SoundCloud listening to imaging from all over the world. It's like it's never been more accessible.
Let me ask you this. So as far as just taking one in one hand and the other, radio imaging, just pure, you know, production, sweepers, promos, the branding of a station, or making your alien imaging sound elements, what has been a longer journey to get to, you know, the high level that you're at on both sides? Or what has been more difficult is maybe a better way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sound design is definitely different. It's difficult if you apply a standard to it. I mean, on one hand, it's never been easier to make noise than it is today.
Sure.
I mean, that's just the truth, right?
But then our standards increase with that, right?
Well, I mean, they should.
Yeah.
sometimes I wonder. You know, it seems like every time I turn around, somebody's selling something that's like, you know.
Yeah.
I might have spent more time on that, but. That's just me. And then, that's respect, like getting to that kind of level, which I think for me, is still beneath where I want to be. But I think, that took longer, and it actually took for me, it took getting out of radio for a little bit and doing work in other fields for that to really kick it up a notch.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I did work in video games for a couple of years. That is when I had to relearn sound design, from the ground up.
Okay. So what's the biggest, I know many differences I can think of, and everybody listening can think of differences between radio sound design and gaming sound design, but what is the biggest difference, or what are the differences that we should know?
Well, I mean, the sounds in game, are usually sounds that, are corresponding to an action or a behavior or something that's happening, right?
Mm,
so most are designed to add realism and immersion, in the experience. In fact, there's a guy, Marty O'Donnell, he did the score for the original Halo, you know, one of the most popular games ever. And he gave a talk at a conference, and one of his rules was, and this is going to sound crazy if you've ever played video games, but one of his rules for video game score and sound design was do no annoying. And that is a really high bar to clear when you just think of games are nothing but explosions and gunfire and screaming. There's a lot of nuance to that stuff. And especially in the games I worked on, which were much more fantasy and fantastical, and there was no electronic. You know, I worked on like World of Warcraft and Diablo 3, and these are set in like, you know, Lord of the Rings times, right? So there's no electricity, there's no machines, like everything's steam powered if there's any motion at all. So it was all very organic. And that was just a completely different way of looking at it.
Is there something about that industry that you absolutely loved and you miss, or are you still in that industry at all?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The first thing that was a shock to me was that I would send sounds in and immediately I got 3 pages of notes, and that doesn't happen in radio. Mm. And at first it really intimidated me and freaked me out until I realized that the guys giving me the notes were not just, you know, middle manager program directors giving notes based on their own whatever.
Or these to justify were, a job.
Yeah. Or just because they wanted to be a pain in the ass or whatever. Yeah. These were guys that could do the work themselves at a really high level. Mm-hmm. And they just needed me to help. And so like when they were giving me notes, like they knew exactly what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And they communicated in a way that's like, now, wow, I really know that these guys know what they're talking about, because they could hear things that, you know, people in broadcast wouldn't necessarily hear, or they wouldn't be able to discern in a way that they could communicate effectively. So that was the thing that was like shocking to me. And then I began to welcome it, because every time they sent notes back, it's like, okay, I'm going to have to revise. And that was just basically part of the workflow. It's like you build a sound and you plan on in your workflow, you're going to have to revise it a few times to get it right. Because what they do is they'll build a sound and then they put it in a game and then they see how it fits within everything. And then if it doesn't work, you have to fix it.
Yeah.
But the notes coming back, that's the one thing that I think was probably, I've never seen that level of passion and knowledge about sound in radio, which is ironic because radio is entirely an audio medium, but
it is sound. It is funny you say that. I've worked with a lot of program directors. They, you know, all generally, of course, like what we do, or else they wouldn't have us there. But the critique you get back is either nothing, or, you know, the sponsor tag was missing a couple words. You know what I mean? It's just the opposite. And sometimes you would feel like by virtue of working, you're not making yourself better. Whereas it sounds like in the gaming sound design field, by working, you're always making yourself better.
Yeah, and I think the culture there in that field, they're really open. I mean, obviously, they're NDA'd up the yin-yang. Like, they can't, there's all this stuff that nobody talks about, they can't talk about, right? But once you're in the club, like, and all is just, like, they're sharing stuff, everybody's, like, really supportive of helping each other out and to make the best product they possibly can. And the audio team, the audio community in games is amazing. You know, it's really cool in radio too. It's not to disparage it at all, but it's just there's a whole nother level of passion there, which I just maybe radio had at one point and lost, or maybe this is just United States radio. Maybe it's different overseas.
Well, if you could do a station launch and instantly sell 60 million units and make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in a matter of a few days, then maybe it would be different.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe just, but you know, success also turns people into assholes too. So,
yeah.
And there is clearly, you know, there in every industry you have that, but it just seems, at least on the audio trenches, because even in games where they spend, and I think a lot of effort to make the game sound awesome, it's still treated like a little bastard child division. They're still like, you know, the last place that they're going to give space on a game is the audio. You know, a game is so much space. It has to fit on a Blu-ray DVD or it has to be able to download, right? So they have a budget for how much space all this stuff can take up. And you can't just like load up 20 gigs of audio. You know, you get a budget for how much space you get to take up. And so that was the other thing, is like you have to create really cool, awesome sounds, but guess what? They have to be mono and 22K. You know, kilohertz. So all of a sudden, like, wow, all my top end is gone. How am I going to get around this? And it forces you to think about, like, where to put the emphasis and layering and all that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, the one thing I will say, the reverse of all that is those guys work. If you find a guy who's doing audio design in radio, or he's running a department or in video games, they're hustling. They're working nonstop. You have to be really, really passionate to be able to do it.
I didn't want to focus too much on games here, but, you know, I'm definitely intrigued. Can you just give us, you know, maybe to kind of conclude this section, a ballpark? Are you being paid, you know, in that world on a per job basis? Do you have full-time jobs with companies? And are you working 20-hour days? I mean, what's the – oh, and also ballpark budgets if you can, you know.
I think it depends. There used to be pretty much just what they would call AAA games. So those are your console, your PlayStation, and Xbox games. And those obviously had big budgets. For graphics and cinematics and you know, physics and all that stuff in AI, but they wouldn't necessarily give audio huge budgets. So a lot of these huge games, popular games, were put together like with audio teams of like two or three guys.
And are they like, working on an hourly rate or like a per project rate?
Well, if they're in-house, they're salaried, and okay. they'll get bonuses for they're called milestones. Like they adopted a lot of the filmmaking. Like you have a release date, and then you backdate everything from that. Like we want to hit Christmas 2012, so you backdate your entire production schedule from what date you want to try to release it. Mm-hmm. And then they have the last 3 months of the year before release, they realize they've only got half the thing done, and then they call it crunch time, and then they just hire all kinds of people and just throw bodies at it, and then they work them to the grind for 3 months. And so those people, like I participated mostly in that in the contracting space, and it was like double what I was getting for radio. But that was freelance. So it's like I wasn't getting insurance or anything like that. And I kept my radio job too. So it was like radio 9 to 5, come home, grab some chow, work on game audio till 2 or 3 in the morning, grab a few hours of sleep, repeat. And do that enough. And it definitely gets fatiguing. It's so funny because I think you said at one point you were going to have Brian Apple on. And
I was still working on it. It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, I met him in, I've known about him for years, but I met him at a conference last year, and we chatted a little bit because he's doing radio station imaging inside Grand Theft Auto, right?
I know.
We were talking about, like, you know, what his day was like working in games, and it's pretty much like working in radio. He's still doing radio sweepers, although for these kind of like fictional, wicked cool stations in the game. And we were talking about like, well, you know, what about the guys who are doing all the sound design for the cars and the crashes and the voiceover? And he's like, oh, that's boring. So it's just like, oh my God, that's so funny. Cause when the video game guys think that radio sweepers are the lamest thing ever, like why would you want to do that? So it's just depends on perspective.
That's pretty funny. So totally, completely switching gears. Oh, well, not completely, but KFOG, legendary station, San Francisco. You already mentioned that did you say you got there in 97?
Yeah.
So how long were you at KFOG, and tell me a little bit about how you got there and you know, your time there.
I got there in 97. I was working at an little alternative station in suburban New York called X107. And I went in one day. That was in 96. I'd been there for maybe a year. And this was 96, like 94 through 96. Basically, like it was like 7 stations in New York playing alternative music at that time. You know, it's just even the top 40 stations were playing Nirvana and Pearl Jam. It was weird.
Oh, yeah.
I think that they just, you know, realized like there's too much saturation. So they decided to go country. And I literally went in one day and they're playing TV tunes, you know, TV theme songs off an old TV tunes disc. And it's like, yeah, we've just let go of everybody and we're going to switch to country at noon tomorrow. All the production's already done, but we need somebody to keep it up afterwards, you know, or to keep producing it. We'd like you to stay. And, that was in like, maybe December, and then by March I was like in San Francisco. I had found a new job. So
did you move to San Fran first, or did you get the job?
I just happened to be looking at actually it was online. I forget, it was like All Access or something like that, but they had this really crude website, and there was a job in San Francisco. My wife always, who wasn't my wife at the time, but we since got married, the one place she said, like, if you ever get a chance to go to San Francisco, I'm in. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just sent a tape and a kind of snarky letter and just trying to be clever or whatever. And the guy called Paul Marszalek, the program director, and he wanted to meet. And the tape I sent him, he had no business hiring me if he was just looking for, like, you know, but what he was like one of those guys that could see past what's right in front of him. And what he heard on my tape was creativity and writing. And that's what he wanted on his station.
Yep.
He wasn't looking for whiz bang, you know,
super technical, like the
production
best
techniques, yeah, and all the kind of flashy stuff. He wanted just, you know, content, basically. Production is content. And it was great. But even like then, I kind of just assumed like, I'll do San Francisco for a few years, and then I'll go to L.A. because you need to go to L.A. or go back to New York. Otherwise, you're nobody, right? San Francisco is a cool market, but it's not known for like churning out, you know, huge names. But, you know, something happened. I got here and I kind of dug it. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, I like it here. And so I ended up just staying.
And now, how long were you at KFOG?
Till 2011.
Yep.
So 14 years.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
And it had already kind of gone downhill by then. And I had an opportunity to go work in games full time, which would have meant moving to Southern California. And for a bunch of reasons, we couldn't make it work. So I decided to like, okay, I do need to change something. So I learned of that Entercom was going to launch an FM sports station here in San Francisco to compete with KMBR, which was in my building and I had worked on. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever because it's like, I don't know much about sports, but I know it offers the ability to do the kind of production I haven't been able to do in a while, you mm-hmm. know, which is like really big, epic, cool sounding stuff. And so I ended up getting that gig and I've been there since then. So that's, almost 5 years now.
Yeah. I remember when that went down because you and I worked at the same company that was bought by another company.
Yeah. Cumulus. Oh, that's right. You were at Susquehanna, right?
No, I was at Citadel.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, my bad.
I remember you had left there just a little bit before me. I left
before Cumulus acquired Citadel.
Before the deal actually went through.
Yep.
But I know that KFOG used to be just, well, okay, you can tell the world however you want to talk about it because you're not there now, but it used to be legendary or at least, and then it sort of kind of was going down the hill. Maybe they lost some talent or some budget, and then some would say it really got destroyed. But I've heard that they've been trying to make a resurgence. Is that
I think yes, and I still know people there and respect people there. I just think that that station, the time that I was there, it was basically in the top five, 25-54 for like 10 straight years, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, Susquehanna was not shy about like, you know, handing out bonuses. That was just, it was a money making machine and a lot of respect. And I got to work on some really cool big projects. It was really like a properly run major market radio station. Then it got acquired and then the financial collapse and all that. And post that, then PPM comes in. And then they basically, they were running that cluster with no program directors for almost 2 years. And that's when those stations suffered. Because that's a really hands-on format. Like, you need to be on top of what's happening.
You've got to be the smartest people in the room about music on a good AAA.
And, like, and you've to know that being the smartest person in the room doesn't mean you can put on weird records. Like, you still have to appeal to a mass audience. So
for sure.
They were a victim of a lot of different things, not the least of which, negligent ownership, and then firing a lot of talented people. And then, I think the mood has shifted. Like a lot of these, we even saw it in early focus groups. Like a lot of listeners were using online services to satisfy their eclectic music tastes. Cause this was a station built for music fans that just loved music.
Right.
And we were already seeing like back in 2005, you know, people saying like, yeah, you know, I listen to K-Pig in Santa Rosa or down in Monterey. And we're like, well, how do you listen to that? Like, oh, it's online. And we're like, wow, really? Or other people would be like, you know, Radio Paradise is really cool. And like, we're like, what's Radio Paradise? Oh, it's an online only thing. They got a really great variety of music and no commercials and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, we're hearing this in 2005. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like everybody's speaking this language now. So it was almost in a way a kind of canary in the coal mine of what was going to happen with kind of. And then PPM came in and ratcheted up. They're like, no, you can't play a fringe record now to appease the bass. You have to like hit, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it was a combination of many things. And now with the brand kind of, you know, I mean, the average age when I was there, when it was still winning, was 45 to 47. All those guys are out of demo. They're out of the book now, right? So all those listeners are gone.
Yeah.
That was 10 years ago. They're all 55 plus, so they don't count anymore. And they never really opened the door for the young people to come through. So I think the station kind of just got stuck.
Okay. So it's not going to be legendary.
It's never going to be a top five performer persons. Like that station was winning persons 25-54. And like literally like you hear like a Tom Petty record, an Indigo Girls record, a Pink Floyd record, and then some band called the Freddie Jones Band. And you're like, what the hell is that? I remember telling the PD when I first got there, like, how is this winning? And he's like, I have no idea.
So, anyway, I just want to make sure people that weren't aware of K-Fog were aware. It was a very, very solid brand. I guess your imaging, if we just talk about your imaging production in general, before I make any comments, if you had to categorize your style, what would you say?
Oh, well, actually, I would say I would say chameleon-like, honestly. I mean, yeah. I think in any given period or era of my career, I've been one thing or another based on what was needed. And that sounds like maybe of a cop out, but I think, and in each era, each versions of those, I try to make it my own and try to make it unique. But if you've been in this business long enough, and certainly at the station level, you realize that, things change, moods change, tastes change. And that, if you sit and, you know, and you notice this, that, what's really hip and cool 2 years ago is suddenly like, yeah, we're kind of like moving past that now. We need to do this. And that's certainly been my experience is like, you know, even with the sports station, we launched as this, you know, flame throwing, super young, super aggressive. And now it's stripped back to pretty much just kind of like almost like an all news presentation. So it's completely shifted and just in the last four or five years. And that's happened with the music stations I work at too, you know. You're up a couple books. Hey, this is great. Let's keep doing it. And then something happens like, oh, maybe we need to change this. We need to change that. We dial this back. It's like constant tweaking. And you know, if you're at the station level, the easiest thing to tweak ever is the records that you're playing and the imaging. Those are the two easiest things you can change this afternoon, right? And it makes you feel like you've done something. So those are the things that get changed most often.
Yeah.
So at any point, I've been short and sweet and to the point, which is kind of what I'm doing these days. Like we're PPM scientists right now at these stations. And other times have been big, epic, story-based characters, all kinds of, you know, weirdness. And so it really depends on what era, you know, you're pulling from.
And a little bit about your day-to-day. I know you get to do some work from home, but are you imaging multiple stations for the company, for the cluster? Are you imaging lots of formats just sort of via freelance as well?
Yeah, so I mean, I have full-time with Entercom in San Francisco, but I work mostly from home. I say mostly like 4 days a week. I go in one day for meetings. And that was kind of like negotiated over a period of time, mainly because they kept buying radio stations and then shrinking their square footage. So I eventually found myself out of a studio.
I was going to say, you had no room in the building and you're like, well, hey guys, I can work from home. So
yeah, and even then it was kind of like I had to spend a few months in a cubicle in the sales area banging out production.
Oh man, I had to do that. The Cumulus Dallas office.
It's demoralizing.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you want to market five or in your case four product, and we're gonna do it next to the guy who just sold a hardware store on a weekend buy. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just literally, I kind of like put together enough of the technology to make that. I worked with engineering, you know, and I let them know of like how to do this and how to do it securely and how I just started doing it. Like I just would help out. Like that's like, I started going in around noon or whatever, but I was working from home in the morning and I would put stuff in the system, communicate, be really communicative with email and just be really responsive. And then it would be like, okay, then I show up at 2. Right. Or, you know, I wouldn't show up at all that day and I would just do complete work from home, do it all from home. And then just like, be super responsive with email, just kind of show like this is possible. And we got around everything just by setting up every once a week we have to meet. We have to have FaceTime to go through things. And so it's like, that's totally reasonable. So that's kind of what it is now. It's like home full time, mostly except Wednesdays I go into the city and meet. And then, there's like whatever other projects come up, I squeeze in between, you know, I mean, imaging is very project based, as you know. So there's two stations I'm doing for Entercom here.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so what do you got? The sports station and then what else?
There's a classic rock station. Yeah.
Oh, K-Fox. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a preference on format by chance?
You know, what I prefer is pretty much what the format or whoever's running that format enables me to do in production. I mean, I would work in any format if what I got to do every day was exciting and challenging and fun.
Okay, so there's going to be a lot of people that are listening that are like, oh man, lucky. He gets to do 4 days from home. And what are the biggest, you obviously said a few things that you were good at doing, showing them that it would work. But what did you find were the biggest barriers? You know, who were the people or what were the reasons why you weren't able to get home, you know, work from home?
Yeah, I think it wasn't trust. I think it was just, there was a fear that I would disengage. Mm-hmm. And the circumstances were unique too. So this isn't necessarily going to apply to everybody, but like
sure. We
had just gone through, like the cluster had gone through a lot of changes with formats and shifting, and they bought new stations and there was new people in the building. And so there was a lot of change in the air. And early on, it just felt like that's just a little too much change. We need to kind of keep things we can depend on. I mean, because there was a sense, and this has been this way, and if you've been in a production room or you've like, but the production room, you know, no one, I've stolen this line from the old Alien movie slogan, but you know, in the production room, no one can hear you scream. And mm-hmm. kind of like a lot of people know this. So like you get a lot of people coming in and shutting the door, program directors,
yes.
general mm-hmm. managers, sales managers, you get those a lot of like really, you know, private conversations happen in the production room. And I think, you know, PDs I've worked up over the years have always come to like rely on that, like to really be able to like, they could come in and just vent about like, I want to do this. And this is my plan. This is my vision. These are my roadblocks. Like I'm trying to, and a lot of times they're just talking shit through. They're not necessarily saying, Jeff, I need you to solve this for me.
I was going to say, if I could interrupt, because
yeah.
I had thought of this and I used to think, man, I'm the most trustworthy guy
yeah.
ever because this is now like my fifth PD who's telling me stuff
yeah.
I should not know. And
right.
really, no, it's like you say, they need a place they can go where they know it's safe.
Yep.
Oftentimes,
even though it's a room full of microphones. But
exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a room full of microphones and recording equipment.
Yeah.
And I could be recording you at any given moment and you would never know. But also, it happens to be, you know, a guy and a guy. A lot of the PDs I've had are guys. So I thought, well,
yeah.
he just needed a dude to say some stuff. But no, I bet a lot of production guys and gals working now are like, yeah, that happens to me too. I thought I was trustworthy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it helped me stay engaged. I mean, I wouldn't deny that because, you know, your PD comes in and you start talking about research and stuff like that, or you start talking about questions you want to pose to a focus group and that kind of stuff. And it makes you feel like you're engaged in the format and engaged in the station, engaged in the station's performance and how well it's doing. And you want to be able to contribute on that level rather than just, hey, I need a sweeper that says this. Right. So that part of it, I think. But that had eroded so slowly, especially back when I was at KFOG and after the Cumulus, neglect years, basically. There's no other way to put it. That's what it was. It was 2 years of them just ignoring the radio station. There was none of that anyway. So I had already kind of gotten out of the mode of having mm-hmm. that kind of connection. And while it did
yeah.
pick up again at Entercom launching stations, even then it kind of died off. So it was like, yeah, we're not really... You know, most of the stuff is happening above our heads. So we're just kind of, we're marching to orders. So it wasn't, it took a while. And then it just became an issue of like, does my quality suffer? And it didn't, right?
Right.
Work I'm turning in on time, is it as good as it would have been had I been in a cube? And guess what? Yeah, it is. So.
And it even echo, I think I've brought this up a lot. I've brought it up at conferences that I spoke at. At the end of the day, some of the worst communicators are people in communications, you know,
yeah,
in the business. And if you can be good at that, you're going to stand out, you know, twofold, because everybody else is bad at it. And you're not just, you know, okay at it. You're really good at it. And that's going to really shine. You know?
Yeah, I would think so. And again, I think it's about trust. And I've had, you know, since working from home, I've had two PD changes, right? So that's been, that's presented its own challenges. Now it's like, now I have to develop relationships with people I don't see every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm trying to be over communicative and make sure I'm really responsive to requests and questions and, you know, phone calls. And, you know, I say,
yeah.
like, look, text, email, phone calls, FaceTime,
right. carrier
like
pigeon. Yeah.
Yeah.
For somebody, you know, a lot of people listening that have only ever worked in music formats, let's say, you've now worked at a high level in both spoken word and music. spoken word versus music, any glaring differences that people might not be aware of or anything that's really awesome about it that you don't get to experience in music?
I think it depends because, I mean, at least here in the States, spoken word usually think means news talk. And news talk, I think, you know, it's kind of an upper demo presentation. And while there are some edgy, there was hot talk here for a while.
Yeah.
They kind of shied away from that. It's much more of a newsy approach. I jumped into sports because it was particularly of this unique circumstance was like they were going to go up against the old school entrenched AM, you know, dominant station, and they were going to go with this really young approach. And what it opened me up to do was like, you know, working at a classic rock station, it's like you pretty much have to, all your production has to sound like classic rock. And that can get really,
okay,
you know.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
Right. But with sports, it was like, no, you can use classic rock, you can use hip hop, you can use trap, yep, you can use dubstep, you can, yep, use orchestral music. And I kind of like was just like all of a sudden every form of music was open to me as long as it kind of supported whatever the message was. And that was at least how we launched. It's different now. So I would go back and say, like kind of what I said earlier, it totally depends on the time and place and who you're working with and what their vision is. Because just because it's on FM and it's talk doesn't mean it's hip. Yeah. Right? It could just be an old school AM radio guy doing AM school radio on FM because AM radio is going to go away, right?
Of course, yeah. Or you're getting the simulcast of the barely hanging on for life news talk.
You know, I think with sports at least, there's just so much new and refreshing content that you could use. Whereas, you know, the Grammys were last night. This is being recorded the day after the Grammys. But so that's a big thing for music stations for the next day or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next
yeah.
couple days maybe. But then that fades away. And then what do you got? You got hit records, right? Or classic records. Whereas sports, like, oh, baseball starting and NBA finals is coming up. And like you have this constant stream of new stuff happening all the time. And plus, then you get into the soap opera of it, of the personalities, of Manning versus this guy, of, you know, Deflategate and all these kind of like storylines that are great fodder, not just for the shows, but for production too, potentially.
I noticed in music radio, I was, you know, and not just in music, in the country format for quite a long time, that every year started to feel like the same. You know,
yes.
It's like this concert's here again. All right, great. We're doing the Kenny Chesney summer tour again. Awesome. Yeah. I'll just whip out the promos from last year and replace the hooks. Or
yeah.
Is the same with sports? Because I never really did love sports.
So originally, but having been done it 5 years now.
It is getting that cyclical feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now is kind of like they call it the, you know, it's like the black hole of February.
Yes.
It's like we're in between, yep, like football just wrapped up. Baseball hasn't started yet. There's the NBA, but that's pretty much it. You know,
yeah,
it's
NBA like, All-Star break. Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of dead. Like hockey's not really huge here. So it's kind of like a dead zone, but you've got your signature events and that's the thing you got to really challenge yourself about is do you want to keep repeating the same year over and over again? Because there are times I've looked back in my career and it's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have stood still so long. But then I like look ahead. It's like, okay, I was dormant for like a year. But then that next year when the same stuff came around, I'm like, man, I really upped my game. Like what happened then? And it's like, just you shift your perspective.
And to maybe echo or the opposite of that is we find ourselves thinking, well, because we approached this event this way last year, we need to completely flip the script this year. But, you know, to the listener, you know, it doesn't burn in their head like it does to us. And if it's a really cool idea, there's a fine line between, you know, reinventing a wheel or, you know, because you need to or, you know, because you shouldn't. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree with you. This is like getting back to another question you had mentioned earlier about video games and how they're similar. That's the other thing is, you know, any sound you make in games, you have to make 10 versions of it. It's kind of like what we do in radio. It's like, we need a, you know, weekend sweeper that says this or whatever we're doing. We need 10 versions of it. So we can bang the hell out of it and it doesn't sound like we're repeating ourselves, even though we are.
I wanted to talk more about the tech side because I know you're way into the gear and, you know, software. And I wanted to start it a little more of, let's say you've got a young producer who, you know, they've got a computer. They've at least got that. And maybe they have some, I'm using air quotes, free software they acquired in some manner, but they want to kick up their game. If they have a little money to spend, I'm curious what your advice would be for them to spend their money on first, something they need to get first.
Well, how let me ask you this. I'm gonna be totally. This is how I am. How young are they?
Yeah, you know, we're talking to somebody that's like 19. You know,
okay. So the first thing I would do is I you know, forget Pro Tools. Everything they tell you about it's a lie. Yes, it's used in every major studio in the world, but so what? You know, you're doing radio production. Who cares? Don't waste money on Pro Tools. If I were starting over today, I would use Reaper, and I would learn it inside and out. It's got so much more that you can do. You can totally customize the environment, learn some scripting, and get this thing to, like, I got exposed to it in some video game work, and because they use it because you can customize it. And it's amazing. It's an amazing tool, and they keep developing it, and it's reasonably priced. And you can run a free version forever. But, you know, you should eventually pay for it.
I haven't bought Reaper in a while, though. You say reasonably priced. Isn't it like $50 or something?
Well, for, for like a student license, it's not very much. I mean, you can download it, and it's fully functional for free. It doesn't demo out on you and say, you know, okay. I mean, it shows you a little warning sign, like, you've been using it for 9,000 days. You know, it's like, they'll do that to you.
Okay.
And eventually, like, if you're going to use it professionally, you should buy it. You know, that's just the way, right.
But so it's not that expensive.
No, that's what I'm saying, compared to some of the other platforms.
Yeah.
Or conversely, spend $50 a month and do Adobe Creative Collection. And use Adobe Acrobat or Adobe Audition in there. It's rock solid. And for $50 a month, you get Photoshop, Illustrator, After Effects, Media Composer or a Media Encoder. You get every piece of software they make, right? Which is, if you're, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old and you want to do radio imaging, I would say you're not doing radio imaging anymore. You're doing content creation. You're going to create a 30-second promo for air. Then you're going to need to do a 15-second cut down where you animate it in After Effects for social media. Like, that's where things are going, right? So I would do that and not think about blowing a big wad of money on Pro Tools and all that kind of stuff. Think multimedia.
That's a great piece of advice because it's come up often here and in the world because it's obvious, but rarely are you going to be just a sound guy. You know, at a certain point, especially in radio, you're going to need to be a great graphics person or great at video editing, or there's got to be a visual component to what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. In order to get mileage out of your content, because you can put something on the air and maybe you have a half a million cum or a million cum, but you've got, you know, 50,000 people following you on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, or Instagram. And if you don't have a component and it doesn't wiggle a little bit, you can't make a GIF or you can't make a 15-second animated version of your promo that gets liked and shared. That's the currency, I think, that I would focus younger people on.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely cool. And that actually, what about hardware? I mean, that's a great piece of advice. And honestly, if you want to do this as a job, you should be willing to spend $50 on your craft a month.
$50 a month. That is like, I'm not going to lie. I was one of the few people that, you know, I might've had a cracked version of Photoshop on my computer back in the day.
Right.
But once they went to like $50 a month for everything, I'm like, no, that's just, and plus it does auto updates. Like, that was just too stupid to turn down.
Yeah, and Wiz is smart on their part because, you know, there's some industries that were unwilling to see that the internet would destroy them if they you know, didn't adapt, and then others are trying to adapt. And so
they suffered a lot of piracy. Adobe did,
and for sure.
All their programs now are top notch. They're constantly updated. They're constantly adding new features. Adobe Audition. I mean, I know there's a lot of radio guys that are on version 3 and version 1 and all this stuff, but like the new one, like the CC version current, it's like, it's really good.
Cool. What about kind of hardware? I mean, I guess, you know, if you want to use your voice for a living, then a good mic will eventually be important. An audio interface, I would say, is probably up there on the list. Is there anything hardware related that you would put at the top of the list of things to, you know, go after?
Well, if you're doing pro voiceover, you need a pro chain. That's just, you know, but you're not going to start that way at 18. So,
well, define pro chain for people that don't know what that means.
Well, I mean, I think once you spend any time in the industry, you kind of know what the standard is. And that's where you use a 416 shotgun mic into, you know, either an Avalon Pre or, Millennia Pre or some nice preamp that's nice
and
clean.
Like you just spent $4,000 basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gotcha.
That's when I say pro chain. That's what I'm
right.
That's
exactly.
Not to say that every pro guy has spent $4,000 on their chain, but you know, eventually, once they start getting a client, you know what they do? They get a new mic, or they get three mics. You know, they get their tube mic, and they get their nice condenser mic, and they get their shotgun mic. And then they get a nice place where it's going to be nice and quiet. They can do voiceover, and then they get their preamp and a little bit of compression. Maybe it's outboard, or maybe they do it in the box. But, I mean, it's very simple. It's just get nice components.
Why can't I – why do I have to buy the Avalon these days? Why can't I process myself in the box, you know, on the fly as I –
Yeah, you can. I think the UAD and a couple of those have emulators that will actually let you record through their software emulations. I think it's the Apollo. I don't know if it's the if it's UAD, Universal Audio, or I forget which one that allows you to do that. But that's, you know, you're spending $2,000 on that interface to do that.
What if I'm just using like a Waves channel strip plugin?
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of trying to play devil's advocate here. You know, is there a reason why, you know, you shouldn't do that as far as being an audio engineer is concerned?
Oh, no, of course not. I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're talking hardware, my attitude about hardware is if it's gear, if it exists in the real world, it's prone to, you know, depreciation and everything else that happens. So it's worth not buying junk. It's worth saving up for and getting a real mic chain. Obviously, you're going to need to cut stuff before you have been able to afford all this stuff. So you can find alternatives, but stuff that's going to last. I think that's the key. Whereas software, you kind of like, you know, you spend a lot on software, but it's kind of, you know, there's stuff I bought like 10 years ago. I have no idea where it is, you know, but I still have my Millennia TD-1, you know, that I dropped $2,000 on 10 years ago, sitting in my rack that's still here. And I would never sell it. You know, it's just this great piece of gear to have. And there's like a couple of those just pieces of gear that you're just going to have. And then what you can afford it, you get it, and you're always going to have it. And, you know, you may not use it all the time, but if I was doing pro voiceover, I would be using that all the time. But I used it mostly for Foley because it's super clean. You can run it really loud.
I've got to ask you this. So now, okay, let's take a big step forward, a big leap upward now. So you've got some cash. You've been in the business a while. I'd love to know if there's a Jeff Schmidt secret, you know, something secret in the arsenal software wise. I mean, I'll start there.
Oh, yeah. There's totally secrets. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything you're willing to divulge on this podcast? I'd love at least one really cool secret that you love
to
use.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, there are a couple of little tools that are easily findable for people who are searching. I think that's just the thing. Like, you have to have the interest in searching. So I'm not going to give away stuff that I've bothered to spend hours on my weekends hunting down, paying for, trying to use, figuring out how to use, and figured out like, oh, yeah, I can use this. Like, I think at a certain level, you kind of have to earn some of that stuff, right? And that you kind of have to be interested. It's really the big secrets, like those, take those things away, because I was making sounds before some of these little quirky pieces of software exist. I'll say this, spend some time in the App Store. If you have an iPad, there's really cool stuff in the App Store. Just start looking for samplers, synthesis. You know, there's some really cool stuff in the App Store, and they're usually $8 to $10. Maybe it's $25. I've taken flyers on stuff. You know, everything under $20, I'll like, if it looks cool and if there's somebody I know that's used it, or somebody's talking about it, then I'll do it.
Yeah, for sure. When I started off the episode, I, again, like you had already mentioned, we're recording this, and I always, you know, put it all together. Yeah, I played. I actually haven't even gotten it from you as we speak, but I played some kind of an Alien Imaging demo. So that's how. You know, anything else from you, I'll post on the website.
Okay, but cool.
I wanted to take at least a minute here again to just tell you how much I love using Alien Imaging products. We've had our partnerships over the years many, many times. I always try to hype, you know, whenever you launch something new, I'll have info on my site about the brand new release. It's simply AIFX2, right? Is that the proper name?
Yeah, I got tired of coming up with new names every time I launch a library. So it's just like, you know, it's just AI from now on. One, two, whatever, however many we make.
And I got my hands on it. I just can't say enough great things about it. I've always said, to me, the sounds are most important, but you've got to have like a, you know, good naming convention. I need to be able to get to the sound. So organization, naming conventions, and then the sounds have to be useful. So if they're too over compressed, they don't do me any good. They blast my mix. I'm constantly having to adjust, you know, compressor. I'm having to adjust, you know, compression levels on pre-produced sound, and that just isn't, you know, right.
That's one
to
of the
me.
Things that actually I've been and that was the thing that video games taught when I was, you know, because my first batch of sounds I would send to video games, they were like, whoa, dude, first of all, way too much compression.
Yeah,
number
back
two,
it off.
Way too much bass. Number three, way too much treble. Number four, way too much everything.
Yeah.
And so over the years, I've been slowly dialing back the kind of processing. And I find myself looking at, like, okay, they're not really as punchy out of the box as some of my older stuff, but they're, once you get them in your, because everybody's got compression in their DAW now, they're all running it through some kind of master bus compression or
right.
whatever.
Yeah.
Once you get it in the system, it's much more usable that way, just to leave a lot more dynamics and a lot more of the space, you know, headroom on stuff. So yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that, because I that's how you know when you've gotten your hands on a good library, I think, is when you start dropping it into sessions and you can hear dynamic range. If you drop a wipe and it looks like a solid, you know, 2x4 going, that's a problem. A wipe should have dynamic range. It should have a large peak and some large valleys.
Well, the other thing, too, is like I noticed like a lot of people were editing, like I would give them the sound, right? And it had, you know, maybe it was 3 seconds, whatever. And they would edit up and just take 500 milliseconds of it and use it. So, and that's like when it just looks like a brick, it's really hard to distinguish all the little pieces and all the little sections, right?
Yep.
So when there's more dynamics, you can say, oh, here's this piece and here's this piece and here's this piece. You can kind of see and you can edit with it and use it a little more visually. So yeah, that it definitely helps.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're going to have information about it on my site, because I told you I would do that, but I'm happy to do it. And so go to the website, ryanontheradio.com. You'll see more information about the AIFX 2, but I definitely wanted to take some time to hype that up. You've got some great videos on your site. It's alien-imaging.com. That's the best place to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Great videos there. I especially like when you tear down the wall, so to speak, and you really show what you get with the library. Not just, here's a cue sheet, you know.
Right.
Hopefully that explains it all. But
yeah,
you
I never really understood cue sheet. I mean, I do for like real world, like Foley libraries. Like I know like footsteps on concrete, footsteps on glass. You know,
exactly.
Footsteps far. Like you want that because you're searching for those kind of things. But for stuff that's kind of abstractly named, I'm not sure how helpful that is.
Yeah. So as I look at it, it's broken out. You've got your the standard effects folder with it's like 116. Then you've got the effects with trails. I happen to like those, because even if I'm not going to use the trail, I still oftentimes don't want my sounds to have hard ends. And so instead of me having to create the ends with reverb or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like I have like a bunch of people use those different ways. Like some people just grab the effect off it and like you say, screw the tail.
Yeah.
Or some people just like use the tail. Like I find myself a lot like just grabbing the tail, dragging it into a session, using it as a kind of like glue to kind of change like from one section to the next, and then reversing it to kind of create a like faux riser out of it. And it's like, wow, once I started doing that, it's just like, man, it was like I just dragged one sound into my library or into my session and I got like three sounds out of it. So it was really cool.
And am I crazy, or in fact, you know what? Before I say it, I'm gonna go back. Yeah. So you've offered up your loops folder in this one, but you've gotten a lot more musical, because you have a lot of beds provided on this library. I had noticed that.
Yeah, that was a bunch of people. It's you always get tricky when you do beds, because once you start doing music, you automatically define a radio format.
Yeah.
And you automatically start excluding people. So I've always in the past been really iffy about doing music beds, because I don't want, because I think these sounds work well in rock and country, but you start putting dance music in there and all of a sudden like the rock and country guys are like, meh.
Yeah.
Even though the sounds are totally usable to them. So there is some of that in there, because I think it sounds more exciting, honestly, in a demo, truthfully, and they're usable, but it's not even a quarter of the library. It's like, you know, a fifth or a tenth or whatever. It's just, so it's like, it was an experiment. It's like, do I really want to go here and really kind of lock down a format with this? Or do I want to just, you know, kind of shy away from that? Or so, you know, I'm still experimenting with all that to see how that is received and how it works.
Yeah. Well, at this point, it's pretty much considered added value then. So you're not complaining. And I mean, the number one thing you hear everybody saying is, I need more beds. You know, that you just hear that all the time. I need more beds. It's like people don't have the ability to use a bed twice. you know.
Well, so, yeah. That's true.
I just noticed that over my years of interacting with producers. It's just weird.
But I used that bed last year.
Right. I used it in a Kenny Chesney concert tease.
I mean, that's the thing. We've become kind of whores for content. And it's just the culture we live in. I'm the same way. Like, you know, we have a really nice music library for the station. And, you know, I find myself, like, even though I download a bunch of stuff and store it to make it easy to access when I'm ready to use it.
For sure.
Like, I'm constantly looking for the new stuff. Like, what's new? What's new? What's new? Like, something I don't have on my hard drive is better than what I have on my hard drive. Why is that? No reason. You know, it's just that it's new.
When you release the impacts, I'm like, well, that's just exactly what I needed. I'm tired of... Because I would go through the various, you know, buyout libraries I have, and I'd start creating... All right, I'm tired of searching for that particular hit. So I started creating my own hit folders.
Oh, cool. But,
well, then you start getting into issues of, you know, all right, now I've got, you know, this library is from Barter. So do I drop it into my hit? Because I got to remember I can only use it on those two stations.
Oh, right.
You know, you just start running it. So now I've got the buyout, the hits. Just
I think this year we'll probably see an update on that too.
Yeah, I love it. And Whoosh, I just want to say again, you called it Whoosh. I wipes, whatever you want to say. But anyway, so there you go. I've gushed a little bit about your stuff because I am a big fan. And so I believe that is proven in my words.
Well, I appreciate it. Seriously. It's great to hear. And I always take the feedback to heart and try to, you know, make future releases that match what you know, people who are using this stuff really need and want.
And I wanted to make sure I didn't forget to bring this up. You're contributing to the Bennstown libraries, but also you are actually available via Barter. Can you explain that?
I partnered with Bennstown. So I had been doing, through your connection, I did a bunch of original sound design for them for like a year. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think you introduced me to them originally. And then we decided like maybe to make something a little more formal. So we partnered on Alien and they kind of do marketing and stuff like that. And I keep making sounds and then they get sounds that they can use in their library. And then also they were able to offer if people wanted to, like Alien had always been buyout.
Right.
But thinking about evolving it into something that would be accessible to stations on a barter level, you know, Bennstown offered to help me put together a package or an offering for that. So if stations are interested in barter, like regular updates, regular new Alien stuff, that's totally available through them. And I also do imaging, like freelance imaging, if you want me to image your radio station on barter or cash, you know, totally available for that too. Got lots of bandwidth for that.
Well, cool. Well, I think that should wrap it up. Let's see here. Best way to get in touch with you, obviously on your website. You've made it very clear. People can email you. You respond back. You're good with the communication.
Oh,
I know
totally.
That.
Yeah, I love hearing from people.
You like the Twitter? Are you all over the Twitter? Do you use that a lot?
Yeah, I use Twitter and Facebook. Yeah. I mean, you know, when I have time.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're enough. There. You're there. Mm-hmm. What's your Twitter? I mean, you know, we're friends or whatever you call it, but I don't remember the name.
It's just Jeff Schmidt, Schmidt.
No, dash.
The German spelling. No, not on there. And then same thing on Facebook.
Great. Right on, man. All right. Well, I think I covered it all. Did I cover it all?
I think we covered more than enough.
More than it all. Got it. Right on, dude. Well, anyway, as I've said, I'm a big fan. I'm glad we've been friends for a long time.
I know. It's been so great. After all these years, I'm glad we finally got to hook up and do this.
All right, man. Well, Jeff Schmidt, alien-imaging.com. You can find him all over the internets and everywhere and making all the great sounds. Jeff, finally, I will say thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Ryan. I really appreciate it.
I will lock it up real fast. I think I said everything I had to say in the intro, but I haven't done an outro in a long time, but I wanted to jump back on to reiterate that the show notes page on my website has some great content. Dare I use the word free? I do dare. So anyway, I'm not going to tell you the link in the podcast. You do have to go to the site. The other reason I will, again, do this outro, the show notes page is loaded. You'll see in the description of the podcast that I said that Jeff delivered. You know, wow. He really did. The show notes page is loaded with some secrets that maybe he wasn't originally willing to give up in the interview, but decided, heck, why not? Let's tell some people more stuff. And then again, like I said, that link on the show notes page. All right, on the website, brianontheradio.com. Brian Cooney, take us out. All right, bye.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.